The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
What do you know about how to get beyond your mundane everyday thoughts? Do you understand how our thoughts create our reality in a real and practical way? Do you desire tools to help you live from another space, full of freedom and liberation from self-imposed limitation? You can create whatever it is you desire. Welcome to Create Your Best Life Ever with your host, Allison J.K. Get ready to receive clear information, tools, and healing presented by Allison and her guests to help you better know what else is possible.
Hey, happy Friday. Happy, happy, happy full moon Friday. Did you guys see the moon last night? It was unbelievably full. Really rich, popped up there in the sky. I have today with me somebody who... You just gotta have to get yourselves ready to take in this person because he has so much wisdom. He blew my mind when I first came across his insight and way of being at David Wolf's Longevity Conference in 2010. I had just been back in the country after the 10 years in volunteering at the conference, and Daniel Vitalis got up and started talking about water, and I was glued to my seat, riveted. He caught my attention like, honestly, few people do, because I knew he was speaking in total alignment with truth, and the wisdom and the consciousness and the awareness and the information was just not what you hear elsewhere. This man is connected. He calls himself a health strategist and a personal development strategist. I want to just let you experience him without getting into any other formal bio, if that's okay, Daniel?
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah. Come on in. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. It's really exciting to be here on this lovely Friday.
So, Daniel, I know that the community at the Longevity Health Conference is a certain type of community, and it seems my sense, without having run that kind of data, my sense of listeners is they tend to be all over the spectrum, and I gear the show towards more informing people who may not be already attendees of something like the Longevity Conference. So, but some people like that too. So in moving beyond GMOs, what is it that last week we had Occupy Monsanto's founder here with us, but from your perspective, what do you think we're dealing with that we need to move on from with the GMOs?
You know, okay, it's a big subject, and I think I'd like to offer my personal and unique perspective, I think, on the subject, and for the listeners to understand a little bit about where I'm coming from. I have a deep interest in human beings as a species. You know, at the physical level, human beings really are like other mammals. Now, at the emotional and spiritual level, we are truly a unique species, right? We have this ability to communicate. And we have the ability to connect to something spiritual that seems to be unique amongst the other animals. But at that physical level, we're just like all the other mammals around us, particularly like those great apes. We're very similar at the physical level. And I think it's really difficult to talk about this GMO issue without understanding a little bit about where we come from. So I think I need to back it up just a second to say, you know what, human beings have been around in our current form, the scientists tell us at least, for 200,000 years. But 10,000 years ago, we made a radical alteration in the path and the course that we were on. And what that was we decided to start domesticating plants and domesticating animals and taking up farming instead of hunting and gathering. Now, that started 10,000 years ago, and we're at the point right now where in the next generation or two, the very last hunter-gatherers will be gone, and all the humans on the planet will be part of what. It's important for the listeners to know that while it allowed human beings to build the civilization that we have today, well, it allowed us to explore the arts and explore language and explore the kind of connections that we have today. It's also important to know that that's where the diseases that we are seeing in our civilization today began. When human beings started farming 10,000 years ago, our skeletons actually shrunk. Our brains actually shrunk. We started to develop arthritis, and since then, we've developed all of these, you know, cultural diseases like cancer and heart attack, and diabetes and obesity that all come out of our departure from our natural way of living. Now, that started with the simple act of taking seeds and intentionally planting them in the ground, and that led us to start clearing more and more natural land to create artificial landscapes in which to continue growing things. That caused us to become sedentary. And over time, we not only planted those wild plants, but we changed them. And we changed the animals we were farming too. Yeah. And it's led us to a path where we are today, 10,000 years later, where we're entering into a new phase where we actually splice species together. It's sort of a strange extension of what we started back then, the Neolithic Revolution. That departure from our natural world has led to a lot of problems with human beings, and turns out this path that we've been on hasn't been very sustainable for us. I want to... turns out that actually you would think that when we think of sustainable living, we think of farming often. But it turns out that there's actually really, it's very difficult to make that a sustainable way of life. We can look at there's really easy evidence of that. We can look at Egypt, which was, organically farming and turned the fertile, you know, Nile Valley into a desert. We can look at Babylon, which was the Fertile Crescent. Actually leads to a kind of domino effect of cyclic destruction, and it's led us to where we have to do crazier and crazier things to keep it going. Now we're moving into this phase, and this is what all that lead up was. This is what I got to say about moving forward from GMOs. In order to move forward, we have to understand this isn't just some kind of social issue. This is a paradigm issue. It's a battle between two paradigms. One paradigm recognizes the value of nature and understands that nature's innate intelligence, or the intelligence of the creator, however you want to word that for yourself, who, you know, wherever you're at with that, that there's some kind of divine intelligence that wrote the codes of our DNA and all the DNA of all the species around our planet, that we are an interconnected collaboration of organisms living together synergistically on the planet. That's one paradigm. That's a nature-based philosophy. Then there's this other paradigm, and it's called transhumanism. And a lot of people haven't heard that before, so it's important to anchor that in, because those people who are forwarding this agenda of GMOs, of nanotechnology, of biocircuitry, these people are part of a movement called transhumanism. And the transhumanists believe in a world where human beings merge themselves with machines, hijack nature, and eventually leave the planet to, you know, sort of explore the cosmos. So it's a very interesting idea, and we've all been indoctrinated into it growing up in the world of sci-fi, television, and novels, and movies. So we've all been kind of bred to believe in this thing and actually support it. Well, the agenda is that we leave regular biology in the dust, and that's why, if it ever seems confusing, like, why would companies like Monsanto not care about destroying the planetary ecosystem? Well, they don't care because their agenda says that we're going to leave all that behind, right? We're going to merge with machines. We're going to hijack DNA and going to hijack molecular chemistry, and we're going to nanotech create everything. So there's essentially two groups of people on the planet today. One wants to continue to merge back into the ecosystem and develop some sustainability with the Earth, and one does not care. One wants to basically enslave biology and leave the planet. And if that sounds crazy, take a look around at what's going on, because you can see that the goal of technology is essentially to break the umbilical connection between us and the Earth. So in order for us to go beyond things like GMOs, we got to understand that it's not just about labeling GMOs so we know they're there. That's important. But we've got to rewrite our paradigm, because we all got really indoctrinated into a paradigm that puts human beings above all other life forms, and really above everything.
Yeah. Yeah, Daniel, God bless you, brother, because it's like coming home listening to you talk, and it was like that was living in Asia, coming to LA to be with David Wolf and everybody there at the Longevity Now conference. And John Robbins spoke on my birthday. He's why I became a vegetarian 20 years ago. It was a gift. And listening to you now, my book that just released in January is totally talking about the old paradigm, the one that comes out of the industrial era and the West science, and how we are at the end of that paradigm and we need to shift into a new one. It's saying much the same thing as you are, from tracing back why we don't pay attention in the West to subtle energy the way that they do in the East. And this is what you're talking about, is appreciation of the, in my framing, one of the ways I frame it is an understanding of the subtle energy, and that is in the ecosystem, that divine intelligence that pulsates throughout life is what I'm referring to here, that you referred to. And the other way is, it seems more like a mind-dominant approach, that transhuman approach. So just to link those two worlds together, yeah, we're looking at the possibility. We're still in the choice mode. It is not locked into one way or the other. Are you there?
Yeah, I actually I keep losing your audio feed there.
I know. I lost yours for a couple of bleeps, too. Not full-on paragraphs, but just for a word or two here and there. So I don't know if we can get some...
I lost your last sentence there, so didn't hear the the next question.
So it really seems to me like we're moving from... The paradigms aren't locked into place yet. The direction we're going is totally up for choice right now, depending on what we choose in the next couple of years, it seems like.
Yeah, so we're in this really interesting situation where the thing is sort of coming to a head, or it feels like it's coming to a head, you know, and where that actual moment in time lies. A growing sense amongst the common people that the direction that our governments are moving in, the directions our corporations, and really our governments and corporations are merging, the direction they're going in is not the direction the people necessarily want to go in. People are waking up and realizing they want to be healthier. Their challenge is they're very hypnotized by the media. So the media sells us a picture that through technology we arrive at like perfect health and perfect bodies and happy communities, and we see that coming through the television screen, but when we look around us we see that that paradigm's not working here.
Yeah.
And it's really nice, because what we see is that it's actually people's values are changing because of the physical experience, not because they're being changed through propaganda, because they're actually waking up at the physical level and realizing, hey, this doesn't feel good to me. And that's way more valuable than trying to wake people up by convincing them. So in other words, you know, I don't want to go out and try to convince people that they should take on a healthier lifestyle. I want them to realize they want to. And that's actually what's interesting, is companies like Monsanto, through the madness of what they're doing, are actually forcing people into that crisis where they actually have to choose now who they want to side with, which direction they want to go in. And it's not set in stone. I mean, ultimately, I think if you believe that there's this some intelligence, some innate spirit that pulses through all life, then how could that thing be defeated by a handful of crazy people? It's impossible. So ultimately, I know life wins, but we are going through that really challenging birth canal experience right now.
Wow, that's a really great way of saying it. Daniel, let me ask you this. Are you okay? I'm getting some feedback from the engineers with the sound. Are you okay to call in since switch to phone?
I can try to. Will you text me the phone number, and I'll try that now.
Instant message on Skype, you mean, the phone number?
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
All right. So if you all
I'll be right back.
In the listening audience, thank you for your patience. We'll be right back in just a minute or two. You've been with us when this has happened before.
The Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. Step into the doorway to conscious choice, greater health, and well-being. Attain the balance that you've been seeking. Tune in and turn on 1111 Talk Radio. Feed the mind. Embrace positively. Release the tension. Step out of fear. host, Simran Singh, will help you broaden your mind and open your heart toward a greater understanding of how to take charge of your life. 1111 Talk Radio is here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Seventh Wave Network. 1111 Talk Radio, because shift happens. The Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. Listening to Create Your Best Life Ever with Allison J.K. We would love to hear from you today. Please call into the program at 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Or send an email to AllisonJKBliss@gmail.com. Now, back to Create Your Best Life Ever. What else is possible?
Great. Thank you all for your patience in helping us handle the technological challenge so you can hear every word that Daniel is uttering, because there's been like, when he's cut out. Hi, Daniel.
Hey there. How's it sound?
Thanks for your patience and your flexibility. So you were talking about the birth canal, and we're going through that right now.
You know, it's, can you hear me well now?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, you know, I just think what's really poignant about the situation we're in, I mentioned before, if anyone's wondering why I brought it up, you know, 10,000 years ago, human beings decided to depart from sort of the way nature worked and to try their own thing, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
It's led to some profound things, but it's also led us to, it reminds me of the Fantasia story where, you know, Merlin sort of leaves and Mickey Mouse grabs the wand and hat, and he starts to do some magic, and it's real cool at first, but eventually it gets out of control for him, and the more he tries to fix it, the worse and worse it gets, until he creates a situation that's so out of control that no effort on his part can ever fix it, and he actually has to give control back to the wizard at the end, right? And sort of we're in that situation. We tried to harness nature, we tried to take control, and we're in a situation now where we keep having to do more and more destructive, crazy things in order to try to balance out the problems that we created through the last thing that we did. And here we are in a situation now where human beings are literally fiddling with the codes of life and the codes of chemistry, and it's putting us into some pretty strange and unique and new territory. And we're putting at risk not just ourselves, but literally the entire biosphere of planet Earth. So I think now it's this crisis moment, like I was saying, where people are waking up and realizing, like, whoa, wait a second, like, we are not gods of this Earth, or, you know, we don't all subscribe to that philosophy. Some of us are realizing, hey, I'm ready to pass control back over to where it belongs, back to life, back to nature, back to creator, whatever that, you know, however you view that, ready to sort of release control, because especially when we see that the people who are in control are sociopathic in the way that they behave, or at least the companies they run are sociopathic and the governments they run are sociopathic. So they are willing to put literally all life at risk for power. And I think it's coming unglued, and I think their power structure is coming unglued. But again, it doesn't go away in a night, at least not by my analysis. So we are the generation to go through this process.
Yeah, and it's pretty intense. I know that I felt, even over in Asia, I felt like around 2007, we were at a point where we weren't able to turn back. Like, things felt normal until about that year, and then it felt like there was some kind of implosion almost, that we would never be able to go back to where...
So we're at the forward escape position now. The only way out of it is right through it, and we're all going to go right through it. Now, some of us are realizing that there's a lot we can do right now in our lives to get at least our own bodies and our own health back on track.
Yeah,
and it seems to me, after, you know, 15 years of really actively pursuing the lifestyle practices I'm going to be talking about, I have seen that one healthy individual, and I know you've seen the same thing, right? It's like one healthy individual in mind, body, and spirit can impact so many hundreds and thousands of people that it just takes that nucleus to create that critical mass. So what's beautiful is that each one of us can work on ourselves, and that ripples right out. So the old paradigm says, if you want to change things, you go out there and change it, but you don't work on yourself. And the new paradigm says, you know, wait, I'll fix myself. So it's like if you don't like what you see in the mirror, you don't try to, you know, scratch the mirror to change it. You change what's reflecting in the mirror. That's you. So we all have a tremendous power. It's a very grassrootsy kind of power. But one human getting back into connection with life again, connection with themselves again, I think is a tremendously powerful thing. And I think it's our best strategy right now.
Well, it's also too, and I've said this on other radio shows. You're paraphrasing things I've said on the radio show before, almost word for word in some places there, Daniel. The power of, like, not going out and lecturing anymore. Because my first career was as a political organizer, and it was going out there to change it out there. And I stopped that career because I realized how big the machine was in 92. And I was like, no, it's not ready yet. Let me go one by one and take in. So now here we are. And it's this sense of the energy, the consciousness is different on the planet now. And the power that one enlightened or awakened or vibrantly, vitally alive, however we want to put that person, has, it used to be 10,000 people can wake up and respond to that light of vibration, and now it's more like one person awake, alive, healthy, and on is affecting 100,000 just because of how much more the vibration has raised, and so it's even that much more holographic and powerful. I'm psyched to be in a body on the planet Earth right now. It's an amazing time to be alive.
Yeah, and I think really it's a moment where we're realizing that we can't be too attached to it at the same time, right? So it's this fun balance because we're realizing that. And what media keeps showing us is nobody's safe, nowhere's safe, nothing's safe. And you come to this point eventually of like, okay, well, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do my work here anyway, and I'm going to do it with grace, and I'm going to do it with love, and I can't do it through my own power. And like you said about changing, the interesting thing about change for me is, again, it comes back to this idea of it's got to be, start with the individual internally. So I have this wonderful teacher up here in the woods of Maine, and he's a foraging teacher. So he teaches people about harvesting wild foods. His primary concern is protecting wild lands. What he learned was that it was way more effective to bring somebody to a piece of wild land and teach them to harvest food off of that. And then once they had a connection to that landscape, they were relentless in their desire to protect that piece of land, as opposed to going out and campaigning for that piece of land and trying to get people to protect a piece of land they've never even been to. That makes sense. Once they had a personal connection to it, once they had a lifestyle practice that incorporated that place, they then had the real desire to protect and defend that place. So it's just so similar. It's like we can go out and campaign against Monsanto, and we need people to do that. But really, we need to realize that we don't even need that food anyway. We never did. We have way better options, way better choices. And so what I love is the idea that, hey, we don't need to just ask them to stop. We can stop supporting them. We can stop buying their food. We never needed it in the first place. And we can stop, ultimately, it's not just a company, right? We need to stop promoting and supporting a paradigm that's toxic to everyone.
That's what my book says. What if there's nothing wrong? It's a Tyler and book, and that's what it says. I mean, just unplugging from that paradigm in any and all areas. It's why I became a vegetarian. It wasn't because I thought animals were cute and fuzzy. It was because I didn't want my money to support the business practices. So moving beyond then, what are some of the things that those of us that you see from your vantage point are doing to create an entirely different canal or channel instead of...
Well, I'd love to share what I'm doing, and my approach... It's a little bit of the coyote approach. It's a roundabout approach. It's similar to what I was saying. Instead of campaigning to protect the wild land, I want to bring people metaphorically to that place and teach them how to integrate with it. So here's my approach. My understanding of the world is that it is composed quite literally of the four elements. It's composed of earth, water, air, and fire. Now, that sounds ridiculous if you come from the Western mindset, the Western scientific paradigm. Yet the Western scientific paradigm tells us that the Earth is composed of matter in four states, and it calls them solid, liquid, gas, and plasma. And so what's interesting is that solid and earth, really the same thing. Water and liquid, really the same thing. Air and gas, really the same thing. Fire and plasma, really the same thing. So it's just two different ways of saying the same thing. Now what's neat about organisms, and particularly us, is that we every day have to consume all four elements, and every day we have to eliminate all four elements. So what's really cool about us, and again, all organisms, is that every day we need to eat solid stuff, literally things that come from Earth. And when we're done with them, Earth literally comes back out of us on the other end. I think that's so interesting. We're like soil producers, right? We consume things that come from the soil, and then we put soil back out the other end. We consume water from our ecosystem, and then water comes back out. We breathe in air of our atmosphere, and then we breathe that back out, and we absorb light from our sun, and we then emit that back out when we sweat. So this fantastic relationship we are meant to have with the four elements. Now, naturally, human beings living on the planet, just like all wild organisms, always have interacted with the natural form of those four elements. So the earth and the foods that they interacted with were the natural things from ecosystems. The water they drank came from ecosystems. They breathed the fresh air outdoors, and they got the unmitigated light of the sun. Now, human beings today, like I said, we've been more and more through this transhumanist agenda, we've been isolating ourselves from the earth. Literally, we have insulated. I mean, look at our footwear, for instance. You know, human beings, when they're barefoot on the ground, we have an electrical connection to the earth that's very real. It's not some kind of new age concept of energy flows from the earth. It's that literally electrons move into our body and function like antioxidants when we're barefoot on the ground. We put an insulative layer between us and the earth so that we've literally insulated ourselves from the planet. And now what we're doing is we're moving indoors more and more and isolating ourselves from nature. We've cut ourselves off from the natural four elements. So rather than getting natural foods that come fresh from the soils where we are, we eat processed foods that have been imported all over the world. Rather than drink natural water that comes from where we live, we drink processed chemical-laden water that either comes through miles and miles of rotting pipes, contains bleach, contains fluoride, contains phosphoric acid, contains sodium hydroxide, or we drink water that's laden with, you know, plastic, you know, petrochemical endocrine disruptors that comes to us processed and filtered in bottles. We, rather than breathe the fresh, ionized, oxygenated air from outside, we breathe conditioned air inside of our homes, our offices, our buildings, air that's been heated, air that's been cooled, and ultimately air that lacks its freshness, which is an electrical component we call the ions. Rather than interacting with the natural fire of the sun, which allows us to produce hormones and neurotransmitters that help to regulate our physiology, we slather ourselves in sunblock and we hide ourselves from the sun. And we live indoors under totally artificial lights that overstimulate us at night and affect our ability to produce the neurotransmitters and hormones we need to be healthy. So what I see is going on is that how does somebody release the transhuman agenda and reintegrate with nature if they don't actually turn away from these artificial elements and embrace the natural elements of the earth again? So my practice I call rewilding, and the idea is we move more and more towards eating fresh whole foods that come from where we live, drinking natural water that comes from where we live, breathing fresh air where we live, and getting out in the sun. Those things, I think, personally heal the paradigm disease that people are suffering from.
What about your spring water project? I love it. I've been turning people onto it ever since I found out about it. You want to talk about it?
You know, thank you. I appreciate that. I started a project a couple years ago called findaspring.com. And the idea was, you know, I started studying food and I got really interested in nutrition. And eventually I had sort of a wake-up call. What I realized is that human beings are, you know, in the way that we live off those four elements, as I described, we're a lot like an aquarium. We're a lot like a fish tank. If you picture a fish tank and imagine all those fish swimming in it in the aquarium are like the cells of your body, and the aquarium itself is your body. Well, just like us, we need to put food into that system. That's like that earth element. This tank needs to be filled with water. That's that water element. We need that bubbler device that puts fresh air into the system, and we need that light to put the artificial light back into the system. So we're like that. We need all those four things too. But like the aquarium, the most important of all those four things in the aquarium is the water, right? So it's pretty obvious to most people that if you had an aquarium and you wanted the fish inside to be healthy, the quality of the water is going to be far more important than the quality of the fish food. The food's going to be important, but if the water's dirty, it doesn't matter how good the fish food is. And that's kind of an obvious thing, I think, when we look at it. It makes a lot of sense. What I've realized about our lives is that even if we eat really good food, if the quality of water we're drinking isn't good, we're 68% water. We're literally, our bloodstream is made from the water we drink. So when I started looking into water, what I realized is we live off a kind of processed water. There was a day when if you said processed food, that was considered a good thing. That's why we sell processed food. The idea that somebody else processed your food for you was a good thing. Today we see processed food as a really negative thing. There was a time, though, when that was different. We're just waking up to what water is really about and what water really does and how unique of a molecule water actually is and what role it really plays in our lives and our bodies and our ecosystems and on our planet. We don't yet have in our collective lexicon this concept of processed water, but it's emerging now.
Yeah, no, water, it's so basic and it's overlooked.
It's been really overlooked. You have an almost scent-free, almost taste-free, clear liquid substance we literally take for granted.
Yeah.
When you start studying water, you realize that water is a very unique subject, and I could spend hours talking about it, but the water that people drink does not really resemble the water that comes from natural ecosystems. So I started going to springs. I thought, you know what, I'm going to try unprocessed water. So I started visiting local springs where the water really literally bubbles right up out of the ground, and I would go there with bottles, and I would fill it, and I would drink it. That had more profound effect on my health than anything I had done before. And I began promoting that concept and eventually developed a spring website called findaspring.com, which directs people to springs in their area. What I then came to really understand was that the water that people are drinking, it's different in every place where they live, but it always is detracting from their health. If they're drinking water out of their tap, we're talking about literally miles. Think about where that water actually comes from. If you turn on your tap, you pour water in, and you drink it, where did that water come from? How much piping did it have to go through to get to you? So how much water is a solvent? How much metal did it pick up on its trip to you? Most people don't realize that the United States water infrastructure was built during the Lincoln administration. So these are really old pipes, and they're breaking down. The reason they chlorinate your water is because so much of that water would be contaminated with feces from breaking down sewage pipes that they need to deliver that bleach to the tap to you to keep you from getting pathogens from the fecal contamination. In addition, most cities are adding fluoride, which is a known neurotoxin, and they add it to water under the guise of it being good for our teeth, but it turns out from a population perspective, it helps to pacify populations. It actually destroys willpower. So it turns out that we're being drugged through the water supply in much of the United States. And then the other thing, I think most people haven't even ever heard this.
Excuse me one second.
That they add phosphoric acid and lye to water to regulate the pH. Now you might think, yeah, but I have a filter on my end. And what I would like to point out is that if you have a kind of Brita filter or a sort of a carbon block filter, it doesn't really remove this stuff. And if you have a distiller or a reverse osmosis filter, you're creating a chemical-grade water that's so pure that even the World Health Organization tells us it's toxic for us. So we're in this really interesting situation. And what my solution to it, my personal strategy, has been to go to the earth for my water. So I literally gather all my water from springs, and I know thousands of people that are doing it now. And just like everyone else, when I heard that idea, I was like, oh, that's crazy, I can't do that. Yeah, but I've taken it on, and it's been profound for me. And now the water inside my fish tank is incredibly clean. And I'd like to point out this piece for people listening. And if you're saying, what is this guy talking about? I just want you to hear this one piece on water. We have, in the United States and around the world now, we've detonated over 2,000 nuclear weapons. The entire surface of the planet is now covered in a thin layer of radioactive isotopes. If we went anywhere on the surface of the Earth and grabbed some water and tested it, we would find radionuclides in there. We have literally polluted the entire surface of the Earth. And it's not just radiological stuff. It's, PCBs and other petrochemicals that interfere with our endocrine systems. What's so neat about spring water is water that's in aquifers. And aquifers are deep underground pockets of water. And typically, the water that's in those is very ancient. And it's definitely older than industry on the planet. So the water that comes up to the surface of the Earth is like perfectly clean water. It's the only perfectly clean thing you'll ever interact with. So basically, everything you'll touch the rest of your life on the surface of the Earth will have man-made pollution on it. But the water that comes out of springs, it doesn't. And you can become 68% made of something totally pure and clean that predates industrial pollution. what effect does that have on our cultural paradigm when you're walking around a bag of perfectly clean water? Because you're walking around amongst bags of very polluted, dirty water. I think this is a really powerful idea. So I've been sending people to Springs now for a few years, and there's quite a big community of people who are doing that, who've taken that practice on, and who will tell you that it's changed their lives.
So that's findaspring.com, and you guys, if you look on the show page to the bottom right, you can see contact Daniel Vitalis here, and that link will bring you to his homepage at danielvitalis.com, and then you'll see findaspring.com right there on that homepage. Daniel, you were talking about, you're presenting it really clearly, thank you, because I know that there's people, when they hear this for the first time, it doesn't say neurotoxins in my water, my government wouldn't do that to me. What do you say when you hear that most basic response?
Well, I think people should understand. Let's talk about what we're talking about, fluoride right now. So there's an idea that, see, fluoride is a molecule that has an electrical charge that makes it resemble calcium. And so what happens when we consume fluoride in certain forms is that it will bond itself into the matrix of our teeth and bones. Now, fluoride is harder than calcium. So the idea was we could harden our teeth. It was kind of like, the idea was almost like we could put armor on our teeth, and that would maybe protect us from the cavities. We didn't realize at that time that the reason people were getting, you know, cavities, it's an interesting story. I want people to know that ancient humans didn't get cavities.
Right.
And even indigenous hunter-gatherer groups don't get cavities until they take on the Western diet.
Yeah.
Our teeth were developing cavitation because of nutritional issues and lifestyle issues. But the thought was, well, we can harden our teeth and that will protect them. Turns out, though, that when you incorporate fluoride into your teeth, and if it's in your teeth, it's in your bones. So when we incorporate it basically into our skeleton, it actually makes our teeth more brittle. It makes our bones more brittle. So the idea that your teeth are being protected by fluoride is actually a myth, because it actually causes teeth to chip and break. And real teeth have a nice flex to them. If you've ever seen people where you look at their teeth and there's discolored patches of modeling on their teeth, spots that look unusually white, that's actually the disease of excess fluoride in the body. It's an excess fluoridation, and it's called fluorosis. And those people tend to have really brittle teeth, and those teeth tend to break and chip, and those people need more dental work. So let's just push aside this idea that fluoride was good for our teeth. Another thing that emerged was that the reason there was so much fluoride around is it was a byproduct of milling, of mining aluminum. And so there was surpluses of it. Rather than throw it away, it got sold to municipalities to put into the water. So lots of things get added into our food supply, not just fluoride, but fluoride, turns out, was tested in like the gulags of Russia. It was used in the prisons there, prison camps, and it turned out that it reduced willpower in the prison population. It actually reduced violence, and they found that it made people more passive and that they accepted the control more. And then that idea was then championed by Adolf Hitler, and they used that in Nazi Germany. Since then, it's now used here in the United States domestically. And it has some interesting health effects. I think one that will be interesting to your listeners is that we all know that fluoride goes to the teeth. A lot of people don't realize it goes to the bones, too. But remember, teeth are bones. Those are hard tissues in the body. There is another place that fluoride goes and accumulates, but it's a soft tissue. It's the number one soft tissue target site for fluoride in the body, and that's your pineal gland. And that gland lives at the center of your brain, and throughout human history, all of the spiritual cultures around the world have called this this part. And when I say that, there's very developed spiritual cultures like those that developed in India, those that developed in China, those that developed in Japan, those that developed in South America. They tell us that this gland at the center of the brain, this pea-sized gland, is the third eye or the seat of consciousness. They tell us that it's where our inner vision comes from. Well, when somebody's consuming fluoride in their water, that gland actually fluoridates. It hardens with fluoride. It'll accumulate calcium as well. And by the time the average person is 18 years old, they have a little hard pebble in there instead of a soft tissue organ in the brain. So important for people to know, this fluoride thing is more of a population-wide drugging than it is anything that adds to your health. And again, I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? We have to ask the question, if we needed fluoride like that, why didn't nature provide it? And if nature didn't provide it and we did need it, how did we live 200,000 years on the earth in near perfect health without it? And why has it not saved our teeth?
So the water aspect of having information, you brought that up when you connected into the pineal gland with consciousness. Can you just touch upon that in as brief of a way with your wisdom of, and knowledge about the information that water actually is?
Well, I'm going to tread very lightly here, but I want to say that I think what we're going to see is that currently we use silicon to create the sort of near artificial intelligence of our computing systems. And it's thought that in time we'll actually use water, and instead of hard drives, we'll have a kind of soft drive, because it's becoming more and more apparent that water stores information. The idea of homeopathy, which is essentially what homeopathy is for people who don't know. I know most people have heard of it. Not everybody realizes what it is. Homeopathy competed very strongly with allopathy, which is the dominant form of medicine today, and it's only the dominant form of medicine because it legislated its way into that position. So remember, there was lots of other forms of medicine before. There was, you know, herbalism, there was homeopathy, there was chiropractic, there was osteopathy. These were all competing forms of medicine, and you could choose what kind of doctor you wanted to see. Of course, today we live in a world where one paradigm has conquered all other paradigms and used law and economics to do it. But homeopathy basically is the science of taking a substance, putting it in water, shaking it essentially, taking a drop of water out of that and adding it to clean water, shaking that, taking a drop out of that, adding it to clean water, diluting, diluting, diluting until you have something that no longer contains any of the substance you put in it. And the idea is that the water now contains the information of the substance, and that water becomes the medicine. And there are millions of people who rely on homeopathy as their form of medicine, and it works for them, and I've had it work for me. So what's interesting is the idea is that you basically are imprinting water with information. The idea that water actually carries information. And if people are thinking that's ridiculous, I think they should take another look at life forms, because all the life forms we know are based on water. That's the solvent that runs all of the life forms we know about. Water is an incredibly fascinating substance. So I really do believe water does conduct information more. It has a kind of memory. Yeah. And it's difficult to erase the memory that's in water. Now, one of the interesting things about, you know, the water people drink is that a lot of people have heard now that in places like, let's take San Francisco as an example that's been in the news. San Francisco's water has up to 50 different pharmaceuticals in it. Why? Are pharmaceutical companies dumping pharmaceuticals into the water? They're not. Oh, I hope they're not. So where are the pharmaceuticals coming? We're hearing now about birth control in the water. How does it get in there? We've got to really ask this question. Why is there birth control and pharmaceuticals in the water supply of major cities? Well, because the water supply of major cities is filtered pee and poop from toilets. So what's happening is the toilet system, the sewage system, gets filtered and turned back into drinking water. My question would be, if water can somehow remember things where it's been and can conduct that information into your body at some level, what's the result of a city of people drinking each other's pee? And what is pee, by the way? Pee is filtered blood plasma. So your urine is your blood plasma. When you pee, basically the filter of your kidneys holds the blood cells back and lets the fluid of your blood, the plasma, through, and that's urine. So essentially what you have are whole cities of people consuming each other's blood plasma. It's been through a filter, but not even a very good filtration system. You know, a lesser filtration system than most people have in their homes. So I think it's very fascinating that people are essentially consuming each other's blood in major cities. I think that's something to really wake people up. What's the homeopathic effect of that? If homeopathy works at that level, and we know there are people who have been using homeopathy for hundreds of years and communities of people, and it works for them, what's the effect then of people consuming each other's blood plasma? I just think it's staggering.
So there's no way like a Brita filter or a Pure filter or even Enagic?
Clorox is who owns Brita. if you were to just look on the side of the box, it says, remove the smell of chlorine. A Brita filter would be fantastic if you were starting with really clean water, but the kind of water, you know, it does not have the ability to remove fluoride. It does not have the ability to remove pharmaceuticals. It does not have the ability to remove things like birth control, and it certainly doesn't have the ability to sort of erase that memory of water.
So nothing to do with tap water, no matter what the filtration system is basically,
you know,
what we're hearing.
Where I live, the water that comes out of my tap comes from my personal well at my house. And that's a really different thing, right? So my house is on a well, which is sort of like an artificial spring. So our drilled well goes down into an aquifer. So the water that comes up into my house, of course, doesn't have fluoride or chlorine or anyone else's urine or anything like that. It's pure, clean water from the earth. So a well is a really different situation. But people who are on municipal water systems, yeah, they are very dependent. They're all sharing these water sources. In some small towns, they might have very clean water. In towns like Shasta, you know, Mount Shasta up in Northern California, they're actually, their whole town runs on spring water. Fantastic. I was just in a place in Arizona where the tap water was unchlorinated, and it was from very close. But if you live in a place like New York City or you live in a place like San Francisco, you've got to really ask yourself some questions about the water you're drinking.
They just removed they took the fluoride out from the county that I live in here in Florida and then St. Petersburg, Clearwater, Tampa area, believe it or not.
Wow.
And then they put it back in. And a lost his job. There's a lot of scandals.
So one of these things is, okay, so some people wake up to this and they go, oh, my God, how could they do this to us? And I would say, wait, hold on. Why did you expect anything less? When you turn your power over to somebody else, this is one of the weird things about our civilization is we've lost touch with those elements. And so we no longer have sovereign control over the food or the water or the air or the light in our lives anymore. We got to take that back. So it's not about, oh, my God, they need to change. It's like, oh, my God, I need to change where I even think my water should come from. Why do I expect that people should deliver water to me perfect, clean, and fresh in my tap? I mean, what do we expect, right?
You say
it's
that
like
again.
I can't get upset that Walmart doesn't sell completely local organic food. That's not what their business model is, and your municipal water system has never been based on a business model that was designed for your health. So really, each one of us has to take sovereign control over how we conduct ourselves, our lives, where we get our food, where we get our water. I call it food sovereignty and water sovereignty, right? I think it's really important. Those are your basic needs, and I think more and more as we move forward through, we called it earlier, a birth canal event that we're going through as a species. As we go through that, I really think it's smart to develop some sovereign approaches to where you get your needs from, because the systems that are in place are crumbling, and I would certainly not want to be reliant on those systems in the coming years.
Daniel's talking about, on May 16th, there's an online course. If you want to learn more about water, he's calling it Water Shamanism or Why Wild Water, so you can get a lot more in-depth with him about the water. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, that's going to be a multimedia presentation that I'm going to be doing online. You can find that information at DannyVitalis.com under my coming events page, and I'm really excited to do that. I haven't given a lecture on just water in years, and
really?
I've really had some time to mature that information. I'm really excited to represent it because it's definitely been some time. I'm going to be doing that with a kind of slideshow that I put together that is mostly images that really help to drive home the points. And I'm going to give people a real education about water. I think a better education than they could get if they went to school and studied hydrology, honestly, because those people who go to school and study water come out and they're still drinking tap water. So we're going to be really going in depth. We're going to be looking at water, and we're going to be looking at strategies for what we can do wherever we live, however we live, to get a better quality water now.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Because I think that one of the things that's frequent when people get their heads wrapped around what we're talking about is despair and how do I make a difference. So that's why you're here. So then you talk about rewilding. You talk about homesteading and preparedness. Do you want to get into that you're doing for the weekend in Fairfield, Connecticut is another way of talking about how do we move beyond GMOs and have empowerment for our own food and water?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a workshop with my friend Frank Giglio, who's a chef and a homesteader, and we're going to be working together. I'm going to be doing a piece on personal preparedness, this kind of sovereignty that I'm talking about. He's going to be doing a piece on homesteading. We're going to do that together for a couple of days. Now, the focus of that is going to be beyond nutrition. It's going to be beyond water. It's going to be looking at how we can start to set our lives up so we're not so dependent on the grid, so we're not so dependent on the handout, so that we are okay with these systems breaking down. Because if, in fact, these systems are breaking down, and I think all we have to do is really, like, I think most of us have access now to alternative news, and we're seeing that the story that's coming out of the television and the story that we're getting from the alternative news media is really different. Seems like a lot of systems are crumbling, and people are realizing that they need to have a little bit more personal preparedness. And so we're going to be looking at that, how you can create that sense of security in your own life so that you don't feel so afraid of the systems that are breaking down. I have a company called Surthrival, and I chose to name it that because I wanted to combine that rugged independence of the survivalist with this idea of thriving health. My experience is in the health world, people get really turned on spiritually, but they often miss the important steps that give them that independence. And in the survival world, you have these really independent people, but they are so fear-based, and they lose sight of even how to take care of their own health. So I'm trying to merge those two worlds, and I'm going to be doing that at that workshop in Connecticut, Fairfield, Connecticut, teaching people about how they can set up a thriving, healthy personal preparedness system so they don't have to live in fear when they turn on the news and they see, you know, cities in lockdown, for instance. They know that they have what they need on hand to continue living a healthy life through those kind of events. So that if they're, you know, the Hurricane Katrina kind of event, the Hurricane Sandy kind of event, that they can go through those kind of things and they don't have to fall off their health program. They can thrive healthfully through that. So that's really going to be the focus there.
What about rewilding, Daniel?
You know, rewilding, like I said, it's my approach to what to do now. It's my personal strategy, and it looks like this. You know, if you, wherever you are in your diet, if you eat every meal at Burger King right now, that's where you're starting, then rewilding starts with you go to the health food store and you start buying some organic food. And then it moves to you making the decision to switch to a really fully organic diet. Then it makes the transition from there towards connecting in with your local food producers, getting involved with farmers markets and consumer-supported agriculture programs. From there, it looks like you start growing some of your own food, and past that, you even learn to start foraging some of your own wild foods, which is one of the most beautifully fun things you can do. There's, of course, a lot more, but that's the sort of earth approach. I talked about the earth element and reconnecting with it. That's the first piece. The second piece is reconnecting with water again. Even if we're living in cities and we are using tap water, we can figure out some systems for how we can create healthier water out of the water that we have there. But ultimately, it moves towards getting our own natural, healthy water again. It involves getting outside again. You know, the average person spends more than 90% of their time indoors. And did you know that indoors, the air is 96% more polluted than the air outside? So even if you live in a dirty city, the air in your house is more toxic than the air outside. So the first thing is I encourage people to just start opening their windows. I encourage people to get a HEPA filter and start cleaning all that dust out of the air. That dust is dead skin. Dust is dead skin. So if you're listening to this and you don't know that, I want to make you aware that when you see dust floating through a room, when you have that shaft of light that comes in the window at the perfect angle and lights up a wall of dust, that's all dead skin. And what lives in that dead skin is dust mites. And we breathe those in. We filter that with our own lungs. Human beings weren't meant to live indoors, so we never had to live in a place where we accumulated dead skin with mites on it that we breathed, right? That wasn't an issue for us in the past. Today it is. We bring things into our home that are outgassing, all kinds of toxic, volatile organic compounds, and we breathe that. And then we cook our air and condition it with our heating and cooling systems, and that deionizes it. When we go outside, the air has free electrons, ions that we breathe in, and those nourish us at the electrical level and actually can quell oxidative fire, oxidative stress in our body. It's like antioxidants. When we go to places like waterfalls, when we go to places like the ocean, when we go into forests, when we go onto mountaintops, we start breathing ionized fresh air and it revitalizes us. So that's the next approach to rewilding, is cleaning up the air in our homes, being conscientious about what we bring into our house that could be outgassing, bringing plants in to eat those volatile organic compounds, filtering out that dust, opening windows. We start to expose ourselves to the temperature changes in air without that obsessive climate control concept. And the last thing is getting the sunlight that we need, because our bodies are fueled on sunlight just like they're fueled on food. We need food for the caloric energy. We need sunlight for the UV energy, which literally gets our body producing hormones like vitamin D. Vitamin D is now, we understand, as a master hormone, not just a vitamin. We need exposure to the sun to produce the serotonin. We need to feel good, to be happy.
Yep.
We need sunlight on our skin to help quell the composting organisms that otherwise accumulate in our body. So we need to reintegrate. That's rewilding. I think if there was one more piece to rewilding that I would give right now, is that, you know, we need to get our shoes off. Yeah. You know, people live in what essentially amounts to a cast on both feet their entire life, right? They strap their foot down. They bind their foot to a rigid sole that's sort of like the backboard that an EMT would, you know, strap somebody to if they had a spinal injury. We strap our foot down, and over the course of years, the musculature of our feet atrophies, and we insulate ourselves from an electrical connection to the earth. You know, people always talk about how, oh, human beings aren't so connected to the earth anymore. Well, especially electrically. So we need to get our shoes off for a minute, get our feet out on soil, get some sunlight on our feet, build up the musculature of our feet again, start to, you know, it's amazing to me that people, not only are they wearing something that's like a cast on their foot, but a lot of women are walking around in something that amounts to essentially a prosthetic limb with their high heels. They're essentially like a peg leg. Right? I mean, it's really interesting. It's like a prosthetic calcaneous bone that's extended.
It's awkward as heck.
they train themselves to walk like that, and it actually changes and distorts the shape of the skeleton over the course of time. So these are bizarre things human beings are doing, but I think that this simple approach is the place to start. We start with quality food, quality water, quality air, quality sunlight, and get our shoes off and reconnect to the earth. Those five little steps, they can literally be things we do just, you know, for a few minutes a day, and they'll start rekindling that wild connection to the planet again and help to break the spell of domestication that's keeping people sort of in this transhuman trance.
Yeah, that's brilliantly put, breaking the human trance that we have gone into. So somebody who's listening to you on their iPhone or their iPad, what do you say to that? I mean, because I use that technology too, and that's part of the trance-inducing power. Yeah,
it's really interesting. It's here I am talking to you guys through this technology as well, and we are embedded in technology now. I think there's a couple things I would say. We aren't right now. It's, you know, it's very difficult to get away from it all. Anywhere you go where there's cell phone reception, if you have bars on your phone, that means your body is now embedded in the microwave field. That's why you have service. Not so even if we decided to go live like the Amish, they still have cell phone reception. So
<Yep.
laughs> it's kind of everywhere. So we need to do a couple of things. We can be smart in a couple different ways. The first thing is we want to really keep those phones off the side of our head to whatever degree we can. I think that's really smart. I use my speakerphone and I text, and I keep my phone away from my head. I think that's really important. At night, I think it's really valuable to unplug your Wi-Fi, put all your handheld devices on their airplane mode or power them down, and let your house go as radio silent as you can. Unplug your speakers, unplug all of the devices that communicate through the Wi-Fi system, like your printer. Keep electrical devices away from your body and away from your head. Create a sanctuary in your home. Have a cutoff point where you make that a discipline to shut those things down. More and more evidence is piling up that these things are not healthy for us. So we can't really avoid it right now, and it is the dominant way we're communicating, but we need to be intelligent with how we interact with it. And I think really we need to be pretty suspicious of these things, because this stuff just comes out on the market and it's not tested for its safety. I just put a blog on my website, danielvitalis.com, last night, and that blog talks about a free application that you can download for your computer. And what it does, it's called Flux. And what Flux does is it actually, you tell it where you live, where you are, and it adjusts the light coming out of your monitor to be like the light of the sun at that time of day. So what happens is, normally a computer puts out all of its light in the blue end of the spectrum, just like the quality of sunlight first thing in the morning, and that light's very stimulating to us. In fact, it seems to inhibit our ability to make melatonin, and it definitely inhibits our ability to sleep. So in the morning, not a big problem, but as we go through the day, computers, that blue light starts to affect our ability to get a good night's sleep, to produce the healthy hormones that we need, and it's excessively stimulating. So what Flux does is it actually, after the sun sets where you live, it shifts your computer over to a more orange-dominant light. And as the day goes on, starts to knock the amount of light coming out of your screen down to what's more like a tungsten lamp and eventually to like a candle, so that you can work into the night on your computer, but you can still get a healthy night's sleep. So that's totally free. If you want to know more about it, you can go on danielvitalis.com, and I have all the links to that application so you can get that. What we need to be looking at is how we can create a healthier environment while this technology is all around us, because none of us have the ability to totally get away from it right now. And if we were, you wouldn't be hearing this right now.
Right. Okay. So they're kicking us off this technology because it's more than top of the hour. See, it's not enough time with you. Isn't he brilliant, you guys? Daniel, thank you. And go to danielvitalis.com. The link is right here on the show's page to get more information and to see what he's talking about with this last part. Daniel, thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
Thank you again for tuning in to Create Your Best Life Ever, featuring Allison J.K. Please join us again next Friday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. Now, enjoy your weekend and start making positive changes today.